will happen on Wednesday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at the Theater for the New City, located at 155 First Avenue in the East Village section of Manhattan. The public is invited to attend.
On Sunday, March 18th at 11 p.m., Suge N' My Bowl presents primarily alto saxophonist, composer, bandleader, and educator Lakeisha Benjamin. Join us as we discuss parts of Lakeisha Benjamin's career, her upcoming Ropadope Records release Rise Up, and continue to celebrate Women's History Month. That's Sunday, March 18th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Yes, thank you. A special thank you to you. You are listening to WBAI in New York. The time is 8 o'clock. Time, once again, for another edition of Off the Hook.
3.141592653589793238462643
Oh yeah, and happy Pi Day.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call.
A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by a particularly annoying computer, Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Voltaire.
Hello. Happy Pi Day.
Hi, hi to you, and also to Kyle.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
I'm going to just turn this down a little bit because what we have here, we have a computer reading off 100,000 digits of Pi. And that's going to go on for some time.
It's good that we have it, though.
It's good that we have it in case we need it. And today is... Actually, you know, today is Pi Day. And there are a few things that I can get on the air and say, this is what's good to be in America. You know, it's we tell the date backwards from most of the world. We do month, day, instead of day, month. Okay, so you can have 9/11 in other parts of the world on November the 9th. In fact, we had a 9/11... the day after Trump got elected. That was another 9/11 because they do 11/9 or we do 11/9 when everyone else does 9/11. But you can't have a 3/14 reversed. There's no 14th month, the third day of the 14th month. You can't
not on our calendar.
You can only have Pi Day in a country that tells the date backwards.
Yeah, you'd have to switch the calendar entirely, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the only way. You'd have to go to like a 24-month calendar or something.
Do they have those?
Mayan calendar?
Okay, well, get me one of those, and we'll have a worldwide Pi Day, I guess. But
sure.
Yeah, so anyway, those of you who are paying attention know what part we're up to. Almost at my favorite part. Almost. This goes on for 9 hours, by the way. I'm sorry we couldn't get something a little bit more precise, but yeah, this is where we are. I'll try to keep it down, but I can't turn it off. So as long as you guys know that. We're back after a successful fundraiser. I presume it was successful. I know our listeners came through, and thank you very much for that. Remember to pay the pledges that you made. That's a big part of it. It's an important part of it.
Especially if you'd like your thank you gift.
If you like your premiums, too. Yes, we do intend to make sure everybody gets them.
Yeah.
And sometimes that involves some battling on our part, but that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and it helps a great deal if you pay for your premium, and you know, when we're checking, you get included when you do that. So.
Yeah, I wish I could have gotten this in Stephen Hawking's voice. You know, that would have been so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, it just passed all the nines.
Oh, that's
one of my favorite.
The Feynman cluster, is it?
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Anyway, we have some news of scientific advancements, which I think, you know, is only appropriate on this. Rather sad day when we've lost Stephen Hawking, Pi Day, the day of the massive student walkout at 10 a.m. this morning. That was something. That was inspirational. A lot of history going on. Here's something else. A startup claims it will one day allow people to back up their brains. Yeah. It's a company called Nectome. They say it'll one day be capable of scanning the human brain and preserving it, perhaps running a deceased person's mind as a computer simulation. Imagine that. Imagine that. Now, the downside right now is that the current process requires a fresh brain. Now, yeah, I know that sounds like that sounds like a lot, and in fact, the product is 100% fatal. That's the PR people saying that. 100% fatal. Now, the company is backed by Y Combinator, an organization that picks a group of new companies each year to fund and mentor in the hope they receive major funding further down the line, hopefully bring that number down a little bit. That would be nice. According to the company's website, Nectome claims it will one day be possible to survey the brains. Wow, I never actually read this word out loud before. It looks like connect to me, but it's Connectome, I think is how you're supposed to pronounce it. You ever said that word, Rob?
Connectome?
It's spelled connect to me, but Connectome. It's the neural connections within the brain.
Oh.
Yeah. You use them right now just to say that.
Yeah, it's like the word for all of them.
Yes.
Isn't Connectome like the WikiLeaks predecessor that hosts, like, retracted documents?
Is it? I mean, it's a great name for anything, really.
I think you're thinking of Cryptome.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Oh, okay. Well,
close.
It's a good name for a hacker. If you're a hacker out there looking for a handle, we've reserved this one for you, and for a fee, you can have it. Yeah, why not? Why not just start selling handles?
All proceeds go to WBAI.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're gonna you know, kill people with this invention, why we can do that?
Yeah, it's obvious tie-in.
Well, Network 23 did this with Max Headroom 30 years ago, so I'm not too impressed. But yeah. I mean, they need a fresh brain. The only one I have, I think, it belongs to an Abby Normal. I don't know if that'll work well, but I'll try it.
Imagine a world. This is from the site. Imagine a world where you can successfully map and pinpoint a specific memory within your brain. I'd like to be able to do that just in real life, but okay. Imagine a world where you can imagine that too. Today's leading neuroscience research suggests that it is possible by preserving your connectome. Nectome, you see what they've done there? Their name is Nectome. Will be part of Y Combinator's demo days next week. That's an event where startups pitch their new companies to an audience of investors and journalists. I would give anything to see the pitch for this.
Yeah, so a lot of the studies, I think, were starting with animals, mammal brains, like small animals, like I think a rabbit, and the article I read also mentioned pig brains and stuff like that. So they're real in the sense they want to do this kind of science.
Well, there's no proof so far that memories can be retrieved from dead brain tissue, though the team is looking at methods to perhaps begin the process while a person is in their final moments. So as if you don't have enough to worry about on your deathbed, now you're going to have somebody, you know, clamoring to extract memories from your brain and save them onto a computer. Yeah, interesting times ahead.
Yeah, this is a case where they're putting the cart way before the horse, and this, the science is not kept up with this nearly close enough. They're relying on the computational model of the brain, which assumes that a brain is just like a computer and can be like calculated.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are people who believe that the brain is just like a computer, and obviously there's a little bit more going on.
Exactly. There's a great Wired magazine, which is usually like tech boosters, but they had a really good expose on why the computational model of the brain doesn't work, and I'll tweet that out from the Hacker Radio Show account. But
Hacker Radio Show is our Twitter account, so follow that if you want updates, and if you want to say things to us that we might actually see during this hour, that would also be nice. But the Nectome co-founder, Robert McIntyre, bemoans the fact that right now, when a generation of people die, we lose all their collective wisdom. You can transmit knowledge to the next generation, but it's harder to transmit wisdom, which is learned. Your children have to learn from the same mistakes. It's saying things that people have been saying literally for many centuries, and yes, that is part of the whole deal, you can't just copy your brain and give it to your kid, and they can't live inside your head. And it's kind of the way, I think maybe it should be that way, you know? You pass wisdom down, but you don't copy it. Although it's not really wisdom if you just copy it, right?
No, well, it's learned at some point.
Yeah, you have to learn it.
Over a lifetime, so you're inheriting that lifetime, I guess.
And modifying it, too, because, you know, the wisdom of your ancestors isn't always the wisdom of today. I think we might have learned that as well.
Talking of wisdom, there were like 4 or 5 Black Mirror episodes tied into this, so, I mean, this is going to end in some horrible, ironic twist or something.
Yeah,
this...
Also, Cory Doctorow's book, Walkaway, addresses this issue quite a bit. There's a strong theme about being able to upload your mind and your thoughts, and it's been a topic, I'm sure, of science fiction themes and storylines for many, many years, but... Here, the sort of analytics and the ability to process stuff and image and map things is sort of making those lines, I guess, less definite, you know, and maybe making some of these areas of sort of creative thought conjoined with actual like academic thought and research. So it's interesting to see where it goes, but it opens up so many things, as with a lot of the technology that we talk about on this show and that is emerging or has emerged. There's unintended consequences. There's a host of things, you know, say this was possible. You could have an entire conversation about all of the things you would be then susceptible to, and you know, moral, legal issues. You know, just storage, say all of your thoughts ever, or a simulation of all of your thoughts could be stored somewhere. How is that handled? And who has access to it? What are the consequences of that? And, you know, could you be used for purposes, or your simulation, your mind be used for purposes that you know, maybe you never agreed with when you were alive? You know, say like a great physicist or scientist creating, you know, things that are militaristic or more economic based, you know, for business and capital.
Well, you know, I'm interested in copyright, because that's what it all boils down to.
Oh, yeah, that
who
too.
Owns the sure. thoughts that are copied, you know, into such a device? Or, and you know, how would you know, the people that are descendants, how would they benefit from this? You know, that's the argument we're going to be having.
And processes, too.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, because we do have personality rights today, where, like, if you want to computer generate a long dead celebrity and have them in your commercial, you need to square away the rights to do that.
Even likeness.
Yeah, likeness rights and things like that. Maybe I'll donate my brain to the Creative Commons or something. What's the best free software license to apply to my brain when I upload it?
Well,
when I die?
We'll get mail for this, because whenever we ask our listeners about these things, we always get somebody who knows more. It's not that hard, I guess, but. We do want to hear from you.
And what if there are haunting parts of people's brains that you know, people stumble upon or exploit?
Or secrets, things that you know, you don't want people to know about. Everyone has secrets, but it's the ultimate WikiLeaks, you know. Just copy someone's brain and you got it all. But the thing is, you can I don't want to get too scientific here as far as what's actually going on, but you know, we know about data and information and memories and things like that, but we don't know anything about consciousness, you know. And we can say the brain is a big computer, but we are no closer to actually defining what consciousness is all about. And we certainly can't replicate that. So we have some big questions ahead of us, and a whole new season of Black Mirror, I'm sure, to ponder it. Okay, as I said, you can write to us, oth@2600.com is our email address. Also, Hacker Radio Show is our Twitter account. You can tweet us right now. Maybe we'll even respond during this hour. Also, we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit at 347-335-0818. Don't call now. Hang up. Don't call now. Hang up. Seriously. I can't believe people call. 347-335-0818. When we give the signal, that's when you can call. And don't pay attention to these numbers. Those aren't phone numbers.
And mind what you're doing, especially if you're scanning brains right now.
No doubt that some of that's going on. And if you have a talk that you'd like to submit to the HOPE conference about scanning brains, by all means, go to hope.net and read the speaker guidelines. And we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you share whatever it is that you think you're doing with the rest of the hacker community.
And they'll certainly pick your brain.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Got it in.
There you go. Oh, boy. You know, we mentioned a phrase not too long ago. In fact, quite a few times. Microsoft sucks. We say that a lot. Because we can. Because we're all about free speech here at WBAI. This listener wrote in, I wanted to write to you to say one thing. Microsoft sucks. I have two computers. One is a laptop that runs Linux and LibreOffice. The other is a Windows machine that runs Microsoft Office. I recently tried to move an Impress presentation onto PowerPoint to work on it. PowerPoint proceeded to destroy all the previous formatting I had done. It set font sizes to seemingly random numbers. It deleted the backgrounds of each slide and set the brightness of all the pictures in the presentation to minus 50. Sure you don't have malware on your machine. Wow. All this added another hour of work onto the presentation. In comparison, when opening a PowerPoint in LibreOffice, it sometimes increases title size by 1 point. I see two possible reasons behind this. Either a $70 Office program is less compatible and less usable than a free program, or Microsoft purposefully made this a pain to try and force people who are using LibreOffice to switch over. Whichever of these two is correct, I know one thing for sure, Microsoft sucks. All right, this was unsigned, so I don't know if the person wanted me to read their name, but you know, you might get ramifications. So we'll take the heat for this controversial opinion.
Yeah, a bit of a hot take, this whole Microsoft sucks thing, but yeah, I'm willing to go with it. We've known the company to do shady things in the past to try and lock in its users to their platforms and products. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something shady going on, but more likely they're just crap at implementing standards.
We also got mail about the home assistants that we were talking about, you know, Alexa and, you know, the Google One, whatever.
Google Home?
Yes, Google Home. All those. We were asking about open source digital AI similar to Alexa. This reader wrote in saying you should check out Mycroft, which had a successful Kickstarter campaign. Go to mycroft.ai. In case you're interested, I also wrote a blog post a couple of months back where I mentioned Mycroft as an example of a digital AI with open source code that can be audited for security purposes. Very important. The focus of the article is how dangerous it would be to start using Alexa-like digital assistants for business use, especially in the legal or medical industries, without some major improvements to security and coding practices. Thanks for such a great and important show. 2600 and Off the Hook are more important than ever these days, on the cusp of the singularity. Thanks, Ralph, for writing into us with those kind words.
Yeah, I think, and the most important thing about that is you can host it yourself. It's not just you don't have to rely on their quote-unquote cloud version.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that is important, especially when you're not online.
Yeah, this sort of thing always really excites me when there's something popular but proprietary out in the world, and the free and open source crowds get their mitts into it and basically knock it off in a free version. That's something that's very close to my heart, and I'm very happy it's going on, and I like the name.
Yeah, support these projects. I mean, this is kind of the cool stuff that can supplant commercial products that are wielded upon everyone, and yeah, often they get it right. They understand usability just as well as any company, and their aim is to just provide this as a tool or a resource and not really all that much more, like gleaning information about your purchasing habits and all that kind of privacy stuff, and at least they're transparent about what they are doing, or at least you can go and track stuff down and look at logs and have access, versus just really nothing and being stonewalled. So yeah, it's worthwhile. And going back to like software, it's amazing, really, using even like graphics programs, the image manipulating program, going back and forth between that and like proprietary things like Photoshop. I feel the same way, that they're very close, and I maybe use one or the other for different features that maybe aren't quite there yet, but the alternatives really do rival the proprietary stuff that a lot of people are used to using. So it's no wonder this person writing in is talking about the interoperability between software or formats, really, of files.
Yeah, I've had to put my money where my mouth is, or my lack of money where my mouth is, because I am a working artist in various media and graphics and audio and stuff, and I've limited myself to just using free software on my Linux box to produce these things. And sometimes you have to jump through some extra hoops, but, you know, it gives me the warm fuzzies, like I said, and it's really worth it to me.
Yeah, I'm speaking specifically about GIMP, and that's really come a long ways as a project. It's similar. Not a home automation, of course. It's certainly just a software package that you run on a machine. That and Inkscape. There's other really strong programs for graphics out there. And Blender, too, has always been a good rival. And Pavre. Okay, I could just go on and on.
Go on and on.
Yeah.
It's not enough of that already today. go ahead. That's okay.
I lost my train of thought. I was going to add something else.
Well, hopefully our computer isn't distracting anybody because we don't intend to turn that off. Here's another letter, though, that we got on the subject from Neil. When talking about the creepy Alexa laughing syndrome, Emmanuel said it would be nice if there was an open source version of a home assistant that doesn't track, store data, etc. One where you could see what was sent to where and why. Well, there is. It's still a bit basic, but have a look at, like we said, Mycroft.ai. Version 1 can be installed in the Raspberry Pi, or as I did today, in a Linux VM from Source. It's pretty easy if you follow the instructions. You can write your own skills for it if you want, but out of the box, it's pretty good, and there are a lot of community commands for it, too. On Linux, running in debug mode, you can see exactly what it is doing. There is nothing to hide. All is logged, etc., etc. If you have a couple of hours to spend setting it up, it takes ages to compile in my VM, which takes most of the time. You should try it. I found it interesting. They're currently running a Kickstarter for a consumer-ready version 2, which will remain open source. Now, please note, I have no affiliation with the project. I just did a search after listening to your show and found it and was impressed. Keep up the good work. Signed, Neil. Neil, thank you very much. You know, we should talk to somebody who was involved in developing this and maybe even demonstrate it on the air. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, unfortunately, when Rob mentioned wanting to run a completely free open source stack of software, when it comes to services like this, even with Mycroft, where the Mycroft project itself is open source, there are still things like if you want to look up weather and stuff like that, you're relying on a proprietary commercial service like Wolfram Alpha for that.
Okay, but why? Why do you have to resolve?
Because there's no like open source there's no Wikipedia of weather with like an easily accessible API.
There's no
API.
Open source for the weather.
There is, but it's not. The API isn't as accessible and like data adjacent friendly as.
But that can be fixed.
Yeah, it can be, but that's a different step of the stack that needs to be addressed.
All right. Well, we need to address that. That's one of the failings.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Absolutely.
It's not Mycroft's problem as fault, but yeah.
No, but as a community, I think we can band together and say this is what we need to develop, and that way we're not reliant on any of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Once a project like Mycroft gets gets going, basically, and becomes interesting enough to develop for and extend, other people who can do something like a weather API for a truly open service can get in there, because like Wikipedia itself is a very good example. It's completely free. It's run by a nonprofit and volunteers and everything, mm-hmm. and it's completely freely licensed, and it's there and it works, and it's been working for a very long time.
It's amazing too, because I was one of the naysayers at the beginning of Wikipedia, saying this could never work because, you know, Usenet and there's all this prior history with crowds getting involved in things and just dumbing it down or destroying it. And yet Wikipedia works well. So it can go different directions if managed properly and if people take it seriously. So this could be one of them.
One thing that was mentioned was the reliance on offline back-end systems and processing and so on and so forth. I read an article recently, can't remember who published it, but it was discussing the advancements in Internet of Things and the sheer processing power, allowing people to run more of that stuff in the device itself and thus taking the reliance away from that kind of connectivity so that it would be only really getting like statistics or telemetry stuff from a sensor or a site that's aggregating that information, but other kinds of processing, like for the voice response and so on, will probably be something that can be accomplished on the device itself without having to have as much connectivity to, say, Amazon services or Apple or Google, just to get Siri to say the right thing or so on and so forth.
I also have this story that was on The Intercept. Police in Lancashire, a county in northwest England, have rolled out a program to broadcast crime updates, photos of wanted and missing people, and safety notifications to Amazon Echo owners. Since February, the free app has been available to those using Alexa, a cloud-based voice assistant hooked up to the Echo smart speaker. The first of its kind in the UK, the program was developed by the police force's innovations manager in a partnership with Amazon developers. Does your police force have an innovations manager? I don't know of any that do. This program marks the latest example of third parties aiding, automating, and in some cases replacing the functions of law enforcement agencies, and it also raises privacy questions about Amazon's role as an intermediary. Now, Lancashire County will store citizens' crime reports on Amazon servers rather than those operated by the police. Yeah. If we can reduce demand into our call centers via the use of voice recognition or voice-enabled technology and actually give the community the information they need without them needing to ring into police, then that's massive, said Rob Flanagan of Lancashire Constabulatory. He is a Lancashire Constabulatory Innovations Manager, so that's his job right there. And broadcasting, that's just the beginning of the county's plans. The next incarnation of the pilot program, expected to launch by year's end, will allow users to report crimes directly to their smart speakers. Alexa, I wish to report my housemate for verbal abuse or something. Who knows? After that, Flanagan imagines that Alexa might be used not just by civilians, but internally by officers for briefings and important information. The cop would be able to say, give me the warrant details for Joe Blocks. I guess that's their version of Joe Blow. And then it would read back that person's warrant and details and send the information to the officer's mobile device that they have on their person. This is concerning, is it not?
Yeah, not only from a privacy perspective, but also having, like, you're basically outsourcing emergency services to a commercial, like, for-profit company.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure why. What is the compelling need to do that? Just to free up their resources so they don't have to answer as many phone calls?
The other concern is the tech dependable enough yet to trust it with reporting things to the police for you? I mean, my Alexa unit, will randomly play a song that it thinks we requested, and we said nothing of the kind.
I feel like you would have to start, like, tracking revisions and you know, what was done in an automated way and what was actually handled by an officer or a real human in all of this, you know, as you ramp up some sort of tech solution to supplant people that are answering phones or whatever, and a report all of a sudden is being written by an algorithm. How do you know that? You know, you have to kind of be able to go back and account for a lot of these, and have responsibility in that agency, especially if it's, you know, affecting people's lives, you know, upending families or you know, just changing, your police record without any intervention. That I think would raise a lot of questions.
Well, these devices are going to become more and more insidious, and you won't be able to get away from them. They'll be everywhere. They'll be interacting with us on a daily basis.
When you were reading, thinking of the social credit system being incorporated and how all of these things then sort of tie together as little pieces, yeah, they may be sort of funny and isolated and, oh, gee, that would need a lot of work. But when the entirety of it is sort of assembled as one large system, yeah, you really want to know the answers to those questions instead of just raising them after you've implemented this system. You want to know. You want to have, like, an idea going into that kind of thing, because when it is all tied together and incriminating people and changing their lives in that way, you're kind of, you know, the cat's out of the bag. They're already, you're already at the effect of it.
Now, I'm very curious, though, about the development of these devices, particularly Alexa, because I like to play with Alexa, getting responses of various sorts. And I've noticed that, you know, maybe a year or so ago, whenever somebody was talking to Alexa, either over the radio or through television, they would act on whatever was being said. It drove some people crazy. It caused some mischief. Now it doesn't happen as much, and I don't know why. Is there some kind of communication between television networks or radio networks and Amazon saying, okay, this is something that isn't real, so don't act on it? I see the light lights up, but it doesn't actually act on it. Now, we haven't done this. We haven't communicated and said what we're going to say right now is something that's already recorded and shouldn't be acted upon. So when I say something like, Alexa, tell me a joke. Did your Alexa just tell you a joke? Is it telling you a joke right now? Or did it just light up and not do anything? These are the questions we need to find answers to. Walter?
My guess is that they've changed this sound, the wake recognition signature, so like be able to distinguish between like when it's coming from a voice in the room versus coming through a speaker.
Yeah, but how can it tell the difference?
Because it's like basically the API, their software is like updated daily, like from, and they can use sound signatures to like change the wake, what it sounds, the wake word.
That's possible.
Yeah. We covered this.
We did.
It's the gaps in the frequencies. Don't you remember this?
No, but those
am
have
I
to
the
be,
only person that remembers this?
Those have to be like pre-announced. Like if you have a Super Bowl ad, they'll like feed that into the,
right,
ad itself.
There's but, gaps in the frequency spectrum.
But Emmanuel was talking about like now where we haven't pre-fed them. We haven't lowered all the, like, us at WBI haven't told Amazon we're going to say, hey, Alexa.
Yeah, when we covered this and discussed this, another one of the possibilities that I think was out there was that if the Amazon servers detect the exact same wake word and request and signature coming from multiple devices all over the place at once,
right,
it's a pretty safe bet that's something that's on television that everyone happens
well,
to
yes,
be watching.
But I don't think millions of people are listening to us right now, or even thousands. So
it
would be less of a chance to do that. That's especially the people who are listening live who haven't had a chance to be weeded out.
Well, we'll waterboard Alexa tonight and see if she talks.
Well, you know, I'm just curious how the technology is developing, and we learn more by experimenting. Here's something we're learning more about even as we speak. Remember that sonic weapon used at the U.S. Embassy in Cuba that everybody was all going nuts over? Well, apparently they might be on the verge of figuring out what caused all that. Looking at a spectral plot of the clip on YouTube, a computer scientist at the University of Michigan noted some unusual ripples. He thought he might know what they meant. This person's lab specializes in analyzing the cybersecurity of devices connected to the Internet of Things, such as sensors, pacemakers, RFIDs, autonomous vehicles. And that work has taught him that modern electronics often behave in unpredictable ways and that such devices can be manipulated intentionally or inadvertently using carefully crafted acoustic or radio interference. This guy, Kevin Fu, has said that... he thinks it might be subharmonics, or at least that's what he originally thought, and was basically talking to a colleague of his who told him, no, Kevin, you're wrong. I just did an experiment to prove it. And they started with a fast Fourier transform of audio, which revealed the signal's exact frequencies and amplitudes. Through a series of simulations, they show that an effect known as an intermodulation distortion could have produced the sound. Intermodulation distortion occurs when two signals having different frequencies combine to produce synthetic signals at the difference, sum or multiples of the original frequencies, like harmonics on radio.
It's a little bit like what I was talking about last week with noise cancellation, but this is, say, noise cancellation where there is a difference at the end, and whatever's left over is that high-pitched noise.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this. It was very interesting what these guys were doing. I think there was even some Rick rolling in their experiment. It's interesting that the conclusions that have been a lot of research, a lot of people have been looking into this and concerned, and of course Cuban government denying it and feeling as though they're being, you know, wrongfully implicated for something that may just be a mistake. I think one of the things that was suggested in the article was that it was an ultrasonic transmitter of one sort that was maybe interfering with another transmitter that was placed unbeknownst to the people.
Here's what he did. He emitted a signal at 25 kilohertz and then another signal at 32 kilohertz. And when he crossed the two signals, it produced the telltale high-pitched sound at 7 kilohertz, which was equal to the difference between the two speakers' frequencies.
Yes.
And the same frequency as in the audio. So that could be what we have discovered from this. And as you mentioned, in a nod to the internet meme, Rick Rolling, he was even able to embed an ultrasonic version of the Rick Astley song, Never Gonna Give You Up, which became audible at the point where the two signals crossed. So, yeah, through Rick Rolling, maybe we'll get an answer to this at last, and the Cold War can come to an end again. Okay, Hope Hicks apparently was hacked. She told the House Intelligence Committee her email was hacked.
Really?
Yeah. She said that this actually happened a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago. Four people present for her testimony told NBC, the former White House communications director talked about both her Donald Trump campaign and personal email accounts. Hicks said that one of her accounts had been hacked. The sources said, however, there was not immediately clear which account she was referring to when she made that remark. Hicks testified before the committee as part of the investigation into Russian attempts to interfere in the 2016 election. She had been one of Trump's earliest campaign ads and had been a senior White House official in his administration until she wasn't. So that's where that is. We had nothing to do with it. our involvement with Hope Hicks ended with the previous Hope conference. So, just want to make sure that's clear. And I saw this online, the FBI's 10 most wanted black hat hackers. Number 10 from Security Boulevard. I never trust sites that have names like Security Boulevard. Hackers all have different intentions. Some work to making computer networks more secure. Others develop malware, exploit software vulnerabilities. Of the latter group, there is a special subclass of criminals, those who make the FBI's cyber's most wanted list. FBI's cyber's most wanted list. Is that really how they phrase it? Wow. These individuals give a whole new meaning to black hat hacking. Another phrase I hate because it's just... we could get into that for a whole half hour. The nature of their crimes is such that all U.S. law enforcement agencies have mobilized against them under a shared commitment to bring these bad actors to justice. For the next few weeks, we'll be counting down 10 of the most wanted black hat hackers by the FBI. This week, we begin with number 10. Yeah, so they're not even going to tell you who the other 9 are. You're only going to know about Behzad Mezri. He is the Iran-based black hat hacker who began conducting reconnaissance of the networks and employees at Home Box Office, HBO, a premium cable and satellite television network. He spent the next 2 months compromising employees' accounts so that he could access corporate servers and exfiltrate sensitive data. Some of the information he stole included footage from upcoming episodes of popular HBO shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm. Really, this is number 10 in the most wanted hacker in the entire world, somebody who got copies of Curb Your Enthusiasm to the public a little while before they were supposed to be. This seems a bit much, and, what is this with the countdown? If these are so-called dangerous criminals, shouldn't you let them know who they are all at once? What if they're sitting right next to you? You don't know.
I think this countdown calls for dedicated theme music.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You come up with it.
Yeah, it's stupid. Really, you could hack better things. But, okay, that's, I guess, why it's 10. And it just shows how just how strong RIA, MPAA, we're well aware, obviously, with our history, but how much they want to control media now, and just how scared of them people are, or they can have these cases to sort of sow fear. Any hacker out there trying to get a show or get into one of these production companies, as though that's like some, holy grail of hacking. It's, as I said, a little lame, but I guess there's skill involved. So, They're worthy of 10. See what number 9 is next week. I thought that was us that was doing the countdown. It's the actual FBI. They're counting down slowly. Can you just see the whole list on their website?
Well, no, that's actually Security Boulevard doing
that. Oh, Security Boulevard is doing that.
I'm skipping ahead. I'm not going to wait. No, I went to the FBI site directly, and I can see for top 10. Actually, I'm getting 31 items. I don't know why I'm getting 31.
Okay, and I was even more confused because Security Boulevard, I thought, was where this hacker came from or had
his street address
exploited. Yeah, I don't know. This was his little company that he started.
Oh my God, he's on
caught.
There.
Oh, is he?
Oh dear. All right. Well, now I have a conflict of interest here. But you know, it's interesting. They're all males. Every single one of them is, and that's not right. That's not right. There should be, you know, some representation here, and we can't have all the cyber criminals be male. That's just not right.
I don't know. All the ones who were failed enough to get caught could be male.
Yeah, maybe the females and
well, they haven't been caught. That's why they're wanted.
And others are just better at doing crimes.
Well, I'm glad to know this is actually coming from the FBI, and it's not just like the 10 most wanted by Larry David or something.
I got to say, this is a rather sloppy site because they don't really give numbers to anybody. I'm moving on to Danielle Gelardor. Wire fraud, access device fraud, aggravated identity theft. Really, this is like the top 10 in the world. And they're all from Iran, too. Everyone I've looked at so far is from Iran. So I'm thinking this is more of a political agenda.
That's a little suspicious, yeah.
It's more of a political agenda that's being sought here from the government's perspective.
Yeah, and also if, like, these are given the Iranian hackers, they almost certainly like government backed and being funded by the government. So in that sense, that they're not really representing the hacker ethos in the Richard Stallman sense of the word of like about freedom of information. They really represent any just like financial interests. So they're not hacking for
exactly.
Like,
yeah, it's got nothing to do with actual hacking. Here's Arash Amiri Abedian. Guess where he lives? Iran. This really is kind of ridiculous. They're wanted for allegedly conspiring to use computers and the internet to obtain, distribute, and use unauthorized credit card numbers and other personal identifiers in order to obtain goods and services in the United States and elsewhere by fraud. You know, I can name 20 people that have been accused of that over the last year or so that live within a mile of here. You know, it's not that uncommon. I don't know why this person is the top 10 in the world, unless he was really, really good at it. All right. We've run out of things to say on this, I guess. So probably best. Let's open up the phones. 347-335-0818. Hear from our listeners. See if there's anything you'd like to share with us as far as, what's been going on in the computer world, hacker world, your world over the last few weeks. We haven't had a chance to really take phone calls during the fundraiser. 347-335-0818.
While we're waiting, we did lose Stephen Hawking today, very early in the morning for us. But there was a great picture posted earlier to the Software Gore subreddit on Reddit, which somebody here before midnight asked Siri, when did Stephen Hawking die? And Siri replied, getting the date from the UK, Stephen Hawking died tomorrow.
Wow. Okay, that's something. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up. Okay. Hang on. Are we hitting the right buttons? Someone there? Okay. Oh, I'm not hitting the right button. I'm sorry. My fault. I haven't taken a phone call in so long. I forgot how. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to talk about Verizon Fios.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah, I switched to Fios less than a year ago, and as you know, we've had three nor'easters in less than 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And the second nor'easter, I did lose electricity, and my Fios, my landline, went out as well.
What a surprise.
And I called Verizon, and I explained that to them. I said, I've lived in New York all my life, always had a copper line. Never lost my use of my landline, even during Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Irene, when I lost electricity for 5 and 9 days, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy was saying, well, you were very smart to switch to Fios, because fiber optic is so much more reliable and robust than copper wires.
Was he
and
even said, listening to you at all? Hear anything you
no,
said?
No, I don't think he was. He said... you know, people were telling us for years how we'd have these heavy rainstorms and people with copper wires would lose the function of their landline. And I said, well, I'm just telling you, I just lost electricity. And when I called Verizon, they said, well, there's nothing we can do. It's a PSEG problem.
Wow.
So he said, I said, what can you do to rectify this situation so the next time there's a power outage, my landline won't be disrupted? And he said, well, we can give you a rechargeable battery that will give you 24 hours of service for a charge of $39.99.
Wow.
And I said, okay, well, I think I'll pass on that. But I just wanted to tell you and your listeners, if you guys are thinking that Fios is going to be a better deal than the copper line, I don't think that's true.
It's not true. It's not true. And what happens after 24 hours, you know, when your battery runs out? How do you recharge a battery when you don't have any power? There are so many questions here. The thing is, you know, we're given, quote unquote, the option to switch to Fios. But what they are doing, what Verizon and other phone companies are doing, is simply not maintaining the copper anymore and forcing you to switch when you don't want to. And yes, if you lose power for a lengthy period of time, you will now lose your phone lines. It's what we've been warning about for years, and it's happening. We hear many reports of this.
Yeah, well, I hope it's a topic that maybe you guys will even do maybe like a segment or something on it, because I was ignorant of this for many years because I never gave it a second thought. I always thought, you know, the copper line is slow, obviously, but it's there. It's always there. Now I got to worry. Anytime there's a blackout, my landline is going to go out. Unfortunately, I have a cell phone, but still, it's the principle of the thing. You know it was always there, like running water. And now you know that it's not going to be there. So I just, as I said, I want to put that out as a warning. And the Verizon person that spoke to me said, you can't go back to copper. He said the copper lines are being phased out. So he said, you got to stick with Fios and just make the best of it.
That is how we enter into this new technological age. Just make the best of it and conform.
And then he said, oh, and by the way, we have this promotional offer of Fios Triple Play if you'd be interested in it. So it's like they don't address the problem, and then they try to sell you another service. So I just think Verizon really sucks. I know Microsoft sucks, but I just want to put in a corollary that Verizon sucks, I think, almost as much, if not more, than Microsoft.
Oh, it's a stiff competition, and right now I think you've got the edge. Thanks for that call.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You
Take
too.
Care.
You too. And, you know, this is a perfect example of how you can race into something new without thinking and wind up hurting yourself. Copper wires work for some things and not good for other things, but to simply abandon a technology completely, you wind up paying for that. And the cost here is not having phone lines that can last for lengthy periods of time, because central offices have batteries that can last for weeks, even months. But when you give that up by putting all the equipment in the consumer's home, it lasts for a shorter period of time, maybe a day if you're lucky, but certainly not a week, certainly not a month, and people do lose power for lengthy periods of time. It just happened here in the Northeast. People lost power for a week. After hurricanes, superstorms, we've lost power for multiple weeks. Imagine not having the ability to communicate at all because your phone line is also down.
I just wanted to mention, I think we had a story about this. I don't have it in front of me, but Verizon settled this week after an investigation in New York. Here it is, with the Communication Workers of America commenting on it, saying this is a huge, huge win for consumers. So definitely, if you're in New York State, this could be helping you. I think included in that was the replacement of 64,000 double telephone poles, which is also kind of related to PSEG. When those poles get retired by the electrical company, they'll cut them off. And if the telecommunications and other service providers, cable television, et cetera, including copper telephone lines, they just end up dangling there next to the new pole. And until they transfer those wires onto the new pole, you end up with two poles. So this was part of a two-year-long investigation. And It will also increase the saturation of broadband to more homes because I guess basically Verizon oversold. They talked a big game and they didn't really provide the kind of service that they had promised in New York, and people here won, or at least there was a settlement, and we'll see if that ends up being something that is visible in people's neighborhoods.
Yeah, but I doubt they're going to start maintaining the copper again and allowing people to hold on to it for as long as they want.
There's just one mention of that, and it says Verizon will identify 100 copper-fed building locations in New York City. And those individual buildings will, because of their high incidence of repair, quote, high incidence of repair, and visits by technicians, they'll be retrofitted with fiber optics specifically. Other places, it says the actual copper network, in some cases, I think, will be repaired, but it is not the solution in the lion's share of them, as you've said.
Now, you know, I really am a strong believer that you should be able to use things in multiple manners. You should be able to go digital. You should be able to stay analog. It should be your choice. You know, I really miss the days of analog television broadcasts where you could, you know, DX and get signals from distant cities on a good night. That's gone now with the digital way, and it's a lot harder to pick up a signal. But this transcends to so many different pieces of technology. For instance, as we're mentioning phones, when's the last time you used a rotary phone? They still work. You can still use rotary pulse, but I can see people saying, who uses rotary pulse anymore? Why don't we just phase that out? Well, you know, there are times when, for whatever reason, your touch-tone dial or pad might stop working and you need to flash out a number by throwing the switch hook, you know, MacGyver style. That is something. When's the last time you used a rotary pulse phone? Rob, do you remember?
I might have tested out an old phone in my collection maybe 3-4 years ago.
But it still worked.
It did still work.
And it's important that these things still continue to work while we continue to move on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, people need to still fight for these features if they're really benefiting from them. And yeah, because in the case of a modern system, you could just simply turn that off. It wouldn't be a big change in the infrastructure. It'd be maybe a checkbox or a line in a configuration script, but that's it. It's gone. You can't now use a certain type of electromechanical handset, which actually has better clarity in some cases and is part of the system being a hybrid or a bridge between different technology paradigms as they shift. Now we're kind of in a lot of wireless and all of that kind of stuff. But the settlement even that I was referencing doesn't doesn't really preserve copper the way it should. They win. They get a little more time to deploy more fiber in the places where the state is saying, look, you didn't do anything. Honestly, I think the copper infrastructure should be donated to the telephone pioneers or hackers in general, and I think it'd probably work better and sound better if a nonprofit ended up inheriting that system and let Verizon go on with their fiber. You know, go ahead, but people that really care about it and enthusiasts, I think, could maintain it.
Well, there's
better.
less maintenance if there are less consumers using it. That's
know,
for sure.
Yeah, and I know that's kind of a tall order because there are cable vaults and a lot of big pieces to that network, but it really is suffering. And people then get hamstrung or they get these new solutions that don't really let them do what they want.
I want to take another phone call, Rob, quickly.
And we know the people who suffer when the switch is thrown on copper are the people who can are the people least able to deal with it. Maybe older folks or people in rural areas who don't have access to digital service. People on the random blocks in this city that don't have access to Fios or anything.
That's right. That's right. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yes, okay. I think the answer to that fella's problem with the Verizon phone is that I think now the phone line goes through the router. So once the router loses juice, that's the end of the phone, too.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the reason for that, but that's not why I call. We were talking about information going to third parties last time around.
Yes.
And so here's one I think might be of interest. Ancestry.com, they send you DNA, and we'll trace your family. Where does that DNA go? To the feds? Do the feds have access to that DNA if they want it?
Yeah, good question.
Right?
Well, just the records that they come up with based on that DNA, That could definitely be shared by all kinds of people.
Exactly. So I thought I'd mention that.
All right, something else to worry about. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Appreciate it. Walter. Yeah,
even scarier than the thought of them sharing it with the feds is the Internet Service allowed to them to share it with commercial partners, which can include insurance companies. So they can jack up your rates if you have and claim like, oh, yeah,
absolutely,
a predisposition.
Yeah,
healthcare providers and on down. Yeah, and the implication is absolutely huge. And you know, now legally, if you're taken into custody, DNA can be given or relinquished as a part of processing. But you know, it's a whole different story if you can relinquish an entire database of it that people have just basically given and as a commercial enterprise.
Fast forward a few years, and a lot of what we're saying will likely become true. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, Off the Hook. Ancestry.com, they own everything you send in.
They own your DNA, then?
That's it. You sign a release form.
Wow. Well, then, I guess we just have to wait and see what they do with it.
That's it. And I also want to, I don't know if you guys mentioned with all the pledging and everything, the passing of John Perry Barlow.
Yes, we did.
Lyricist for the Grateful Dead.
We did mention that.
EFF founder.
Uh-huh. We talked about that a few shows ago, yes.
Okay, I missed that show.
Yeah. You'll be interested, though, if I don't know if you have access to our archives, but we interviewed him many years ago in the 1990s, and it was a really good interview.
I'll have to look for that.
Yes.
And how do I get my Car Hacker's Handbook I pledged for back in June?
Oh, boy, really? You still haven't gotten that?
Nope, and the Book of Essays.
Okay, email.
I pledged right away with a credit card.
Email us, oth@2600.com. Give us your details. And we'll pursue that. And that goes for anybody else who has not received premiums from any drive before the one that just ended. So the one that just ended is the winter drive. If you're waiting for anything from a drive prior to that, within reason, don't go back 10 years, within the last year or so, let us know and we will do our very best.
Yeah, but we need to know about it to be able – might be able to help you. But if we don't know about it, we don't have the information. We can't track it down, and it really gets a lot harder the longer – the more time is
– Yeah, thanks for telling us, and just email us the details and we will figure this out.
Okay, and thanks for keeping us informed out here.
Of course. That's what we do. Thank you. Might have time for one more, maybe, if somebody is dialing fast. It's good to hear from our listeners again.
Yeah, a lot of good letters and a lot of good phone calls. I'm really thrilled to hear from people this week.
If you don't get through, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. And, of course, our Twitter account is ready for you to tweet at us, Hacker Radio Show. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, guys. I had a call about the copper because I'm the guy that got cut off in Fairhaven, New Jersey back in June, remember?
Oh, yes.
I paid my bill. They cut me off.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a phone for 2 months. You know, and then trying on them 100-degree days to call the number, you know, doing tree service work, you're soaking wet, to call the number to get somebody to come over to straighten it out. But what it is the president, the CEO of Verizon, McAdam, Lloyd McAdam. I think the guy's making like, I forget the salary, but it's in the millions every year, you know?
Okay.
But, you know, we work with Verizon workers in storms and stuff like that. They're trying to cut their benefits pay. That's why they went on strike. But Verizon, I got to say, with this Fios, immediately after they take your, I was the last one in town. So they cut my copper off. I come home, the phone's dead. I got a cell phone, right? But I work for Forest Fire Service. We're on call, and I told them that. But they don't care.
Wow.
They cut the phone off. One of my Asplund chippers was stolen from a farm where I was working. Nobody could get a hold of me. So I lost a nice tree chipper. It's up in North Jersey somewhere. I'm going to find it one of these days. But they don't care about their workers, and they don't care about their customers one bit. They're worse. They're probably just as bad as 45 in the White House, if I could say so.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is something to end on. That is really...
When I hear the copper, I got a call, because in every storm we've had on the Jersey coast, when we've been out of electricity and everything for over a month, the phone never stopped ringing. But yes. With this Fios, you'll lose it within a day or two.
Absolutely. And that is a real concern. It will cost lives. Listen, we are out of time.
Well, they don't care. They don't care about lives.
We're going to have to leave it at that, unfortunately. But we will continue talking about this. Thanks for telling us that. Thanks for sharing your story. And thanks to everybody else who has been trying to get through. Again, write to us, oth@2600.com. And we're going to have to end the Pi recitation at this point.
45956.
Nope, sorry. And Rob, we have something special to go out on. What is this?
We do.
We
do. As a final goodbye to Professor Hawking, this is Professor Hawking himself covering a song by Monty Python.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious, or daft, and you feel that you've had quite enough, just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned the sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 400,000 miles an hour, in a galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 500 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 6,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 1,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe. Expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know. 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere out in space, cause there's bugger all down here on Earth.
On Friday, March 16th at 10:30 a.m. at the UN Church Centre, join GenderLink South Africa and the International Association of Women in Radio and Television for a workshop panel discussion on Me Too Online, solutions to counter cyber violence against women. The workshop will seek to create industry-wide guidelines and techniques for women to use to fight sexualized and gender cyber violence. For more information, contact 917 957 6342. That's 917 957 6342. And these panels are open to the public.
The next Community Advisory Board meeting will be held on March 18th. It will be held at 1 p.m. at the 60 Wall Street Atrium. All listeners are invited to attend. Once again, the next Community Advisory Board meeting will be held on March 18th. It will be held at 1 p.m. at the 60 Wall Street Atrium. All listeners are invited to attend.
Today is March the 14th, 2018. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of this program is available on wbai.org/archive and prn.fm and on our website pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 on the radio and prn.fm on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are slightly different. We note with sadness, British scientist Stephen Hawking passed away at age 76. He was diagnosed with motor neurons disease in 1963 and went on to shape modern cosmology. Stephen Hawking is the author of A Brief History of Time, which was an international bestseller. He is regarded as one of the most brilliant theoretical physicists since Albert Einstein. In the news this evening, right to repair legislation that is pending in 18 states. Google now has 3 Android configurations, Android, Android Go, and Android One. Android P is being released. And then we're going to look at, what do you select, Android or iPhone? Let's get on with the show. Recent announcement that California has pending legislation on right to repair, and there's 17 other states that has pending legislation, although none of it has passed yet, with 18 states advocating on right to repair.
What do you mean by right to repair? Of course I have the right to repair anything that I own.
Well, what they're saying is that, and if you looked at the proposed legislation, they're all saying the right to repair means that information has to be available on how, and also parts also have to be available to enable you to do it.
So you're saying once I buy a product from Company A, Company A has the responsibility to provide me with all of the information I need to repair their product. That would include a tech manual. That would include either tools or the description of tools that would be necessary, with the schematics, whatever is necessary.
And to make it available, if there's a cost, that it's a modest cost, that not something outrageous, like $1 million for this schematic. There's a real cost involved in reproducing it. Well, they should be able to charge that nominal cost.
What about spare parts?
Same thing with spare parts, or allow third party to make the spare parts available. And as you know, in the car market, you can buy third party spare parts readily, like batteries and so on. You don't have to get the original battery that came with the car. There's many batteries which are compliant with the specs required. In other words, if it meets specs, it should be acceptable.
Don't really have a problem on either side of that. My question is, they provide me, the manufacturer provides me with a schematic, with a place to buy the replacement parts, and as a result, I basically break the phone or the computer. Do they have any responsibility to fix what I just broke?
No, unless if you were negligent, the answer is no.
How do you know if I was negligent?
Well,
I could have broken it, but not with the negligence. No, the point I'm making, rather, is if my smartphone is put together basically without replaceable parts, that is, the battery is a film battery, it doesn't have a battery case around it, the motherboard, so it's not meant to be repaired, there's no way even to... for me to easily open it up to discover that I shouldn't have opened it. How does that work in that case?
That's very easy. In other words, suppose you have a problem with your iPhone and Apple says we can fix it. Then if they can fix it, then whatever means they use should be made available to a third party. And that's what these states are proposing with the legislation. If you can repair it and someone else says, well, I could find someone so I can repair it at a lower cost. They're saying make it available.
All right. So you're saying this is not necessarily do it yourself, but this is opening up to third party repair services.
Right. Or if you want to do it yourself and you have the capability of doing it, like
as you mentioned on the air a couple of years ago, you had an Acer notebook and you went on YouTube. You found out what part was needed and you watched YouTube step by step how to do it, and you did it yourself.
And indeed, I bought the keyboard. It was a keyboard that malfunctioned, and I bought it from a third party that I had found on the net. And when I got the keyboard, I found it was manufactured by the same factory and had the same part number as the one I had taken out of the Acer. Although, in other words, the factory was selling them direct to third-party people. That I appreciate. But Acer, when they designed and built the laptop, it was built with a replaceable keyboard, replaceable hard disk, replaceable memory. And once I was shown how on YouTube how to open the case without breaking anything, it was all available to me. But suppose it was designed...
Wait, Joe, let me stop you right there. And you got your instructions on YouTube because someone posted it, but assuming that the there was no maintenance manual to tell you to change the part, how would you feel about it? And it's not on YouTube.
Well, that's sort of the point, Hank. If it's doable, you'll find it on YouTube. There's several million YouTube films loaded every week. The most important part of YouTube, which was, I think, purchased by Google, the most important part of that is their index. I can look up anything and quickly find the pictures or the, if there is one. What I'm saying is, suppose it was designed not to be opened. Now, the factory under warranty would either try to open it and rebuild it. They have the ability in factory to rebuild it, or they would replace it with another machine that they had repaired and rebuilt. To say that that has to be made, that service has to be made available to everybody, I think is unreasonable.
Well, let me put it this way. You have the other extreme where, let's take Apple. They say, you want the spare parts, you got to go through their authorized dealers, or actually in their case, order from us directly. You can't use a third party.
For a long time, that's what General Motors did with their Delco division. But if a third party found it was profitable to develop the spare parts, they would. Now, indeed, that's what happened. They found that it would be profitable to replace batteries. So there are numerous battery companies with General Motors type or General Motors compatible batteries. They said that basically an oil filter is a replaceable or a consumable item. So there are three or four or five different oil filter companies now out there. But there weren't when that very first General Motors car came out. This was developed later. If I want to replace, for the sake of argument, let's say the door handle on a 1952 Chevy, there's no third party to go to. I have to go to a junkyard and find a junked 1952 Chevy that I can take the door handle off of. And incidentally, I picked that because that's exactly what I did.
Well, let me pick a different example, Joe. The iPhone 6 S, okay, that's a good example. In changing the battery, the Apple cost is $79.95 or something like that, and they said that because of the PR flack with about, you know, how they've been, you know, talking about degrading the battery and all that, and they didn't really degrade the battery. They just, you know, give it, try to lengthen the life of the battery in terms of recharge, but they say, okay, we'll replace the battery at $29.95, and basically that's the cost of the battery, and then they're eating the cost of the labor. But if it was like a typical model that, you know, you have to go to Apple, instead of $79.95, a third party says, we'll do it for $50, why can't I order the battery for $29.95 and do it myself?
Actually, you can, but not from Apple.
Well, my point is Apple does not make it available to you because it's a customized battery.
Yeah, but there are some third parties that are now in China now producing that battery.
But Apple says only authorized people can get that. See, that's part of the problem. Well, let me ask you, overall, with this proposed legislation and maybe with some modification about under what conditions you favor right to repair legislation?
Under the right conditions, and if they hired somebody competent to write the law, which they don't normally do.
Google offers its Android mobile operating system in three different configurations. Android, the one that you're more familiar with, Android Go, and Android One. The last two are aimed at budget systems. Google unveiled Android Go as a stripped-down version of Android 8.1 Oreo, optimized to work on smartphones running on 1 gigabyte of RAM or less. Google sees most of these devices costing less than $100. Case in point, the ZTE Tempo Go